Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology. Here is today's host of Startup Hustle, covering all things e-commerce, Amazon, startups, entrepreneurship, honestly, anything under those buckets we're talking about here. Today's title is going to be The Future of Food. But before I get into telling you more about that and like what that title exactly means, and before I introduce today's guest, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io. If you're hiring software developers and having a hard time, Fullscale can help you build a software team quickly and affordably, and has a platform to help you manage that team. Visit Fullscale.io to learn more. Today's guest is Ryan Bethencourt. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Matt. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, nice to meet you. Founder of Wild Earth, and someone that is a fellow pet brand owner. Okay. You know, I've been doing it for going on 7 years with my co-founder, Ben Bellinson. It can be a little bit difficult. So I'm super excited to hear your story and honestly hear like how you've gotten to where you are with the success that you guys have had, just for my own curiosity, much less our listeners. So I'll try to make it useful for everyone. I love getting started just kind of like, I want to know your story and I want to know the origin story, not just, you know, not just the future of food and not just what is Wild Earth, but, you know, Ryan and, you know, how did you get into this space of owning a brand that has to do with pet food? And, you know, have you been an entrepreneur? Let's start with this one. Have you been an entrepreneur like, you know, since you were a kid? Is it something that you always thought you'd be doing, or is it something you kind of found?
Yeah, no. I would say I became an accidental entrepreneur. So I've always loved science, right? So I would say I was like a frustrated scientist. I even remember I don't know if you remember those, as kids, some of us had like chemistry sets and things. So did you ever have one of those chemistry sets? You could make like little crystals. You put like different lotions and potions together, and there were like these little cool little like labs that you could get. And I remember I would make these little crystals, different colors, and I would try and sell them to people, right?
Okay.
And it was, you know, I love the science. I love creating it, but then I would try and sell it. I'd be like, hey, I made a crystal. Do you want to buy it? And you know, most people were like, you know, this is not a crystal you can do anything with. But like that was my like early days. I've always loved science, and I became a frustrated scientist because I wanted to become an entrepreneur. And I saw a lot of my friends in the tech space were becoming entrepreneurs, and very few scientists were. And so I kind of started.
Can we stop, Ryan? Not to interrupt, but I don't want you to skip this part. Okay,
yeah.
So I want to go into this. You said you always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but you kind of fell into it by accident.
Yeah.
Because you're a scientist, right? So were your parents like business owners? Were they like entrepreneurs? Like, what was the first like glimpse of entrepreneurship that you saw?
Yeah. So the first glimpse of entrepreneurship were my parents. So they started one of the first solar water, solar heating companies in Florida. So my parents were Cuban refugees. They came to Florida. I was born in Miami. They started a solar water heating company. I mean, this was, 30 years, 40 years ago. They kind of showed me that you could actually build something. And at the time, that was pretty advanced. Like, they were putting solar panels on people's roofs to heat their water and all that other sort of stuff. And so that was, go ahead.
That was something that you like, because I meet some that are like inspired by that and want to do that. And then others that are like, I'm doing anything but business ownership. Like my parents, it was a struggle. They hate, they fought all the time. We never had money. It was something that you were like, I want that too. And I want to just like invent stuff.
Yeah, it was a mixture because that company failed. So my father, long story, like if we go real back, my father left us when I was 6 years old. And he took all the money, right? He had a midlife crisis. The company failed. My mother had to lay off, 12 employees with no money. So he basically took payroll. And so she had to lay them off. And it was a horrible time. We became, pretty poor at that time. And so it was like this very mixed thing where I saw them build something amazing and then I saw it all fall apart. And so for me, the one thing that that really kind of kept me engaged with science, right? So I was like, I was a scientist, but I had this like, I wanted to build stuff. I wanted to move things quickly. And I only realized later that I loved selling things, that I loved the idea of building businesses. And I never seen anyone that built a science-based business, right? So for me, that was kind of new tech, I guess, solar heating and whatever. That was a bit technology focused. But it was actually when I was in the lab, so I became a scientist. I dropped out of my PhD because I was so frustrated at how slow everything was moving. And all my all my professors at the time were like, well, if you're no longer a scientist, we don't know what you're gonna do. Like get a job somewhere, like be a lab manager or something. And I was like, wow, that doesn't sound great to me.
Sounds horrible.
Right? It's like I literally drop out because things move so slow and I have to like run the lab instead or something, because then I would do some business stuff, I guess. And so I kind of went out into the wilderness and started in pharmaceutical sales, and I learned how to sell there, right? So I was going door to door selling, back in the days with Pfizer in New York. And then I was still like, I kind of started to learn how to sell bigger and bigger ticket items. And then I stumbled across, like back in 2008, there were a whole bunch of biotech companies that were going bust. I moved to California. A bunch of biotech companies were going bust, and myself and a couple of friends, we started to buy used lab equipment for like pennies on the dollar, and we started to make labs in like our kitchens and in our garage. I didn't have a garage; I had a kitchen, right? So I had an apartment. So I was, but we were making labs where we lived, and we're doing science. And I was like, this is interesting, cool. Right? It was like I was like, maybe we could do low cost biotech. Like maybe that's possible. And so that started what's now called the biohacker movement. It was like a bunch of like a dozen plus people who were doing this, both in California, New York, and a bunch of other places. And then it gave me this idea. I was like, well, how do we help scientists become entrepreneurs? Because I was really frustrated, right? Like I love science, but I'd never heard of anyone starting a company, a science-based business for like a 50K, right? Or 100K. But I knew all these people that started like software businesses with like nothing, a computer and like some software. Right. And so I was like, how do we do low cost science and low cost biotech? And that started me on a journey to figure that out. I started a biotech accelerator totally by accident. First a biohacker space, then a co-working space that I started funded with my own money and a few other people that came in with me, where basically scientists could evenings and weekends, they could do science. Cause I was like, let's build this shared space. And that eventually led, I was trying to raise money and eventually led to me meeting a guy named Sean O'Sullivan and a few of his partners at this venture capital firm in San Francisco. And they were like, yeah, let's do this. And I was like, let's do what? And they were like, well, let's do this accelerator thing. And I was like, okay, well, we need money. And they're like, well, we have it and we're going to deploy it. And so I was like, oh. And so I became like this accidental investor. But I was helping scientists build businesses, which was the thing that like I absolutely loved. And so,
can we stop there for a second, Ryan? Yeah. Because one, I think whenever you're building anything to solve a problem, you know, it's a good idea, or it's like a lot closer to being a good idea than mm-hmm. one that's not, right? And then when you're just providing value for people because it's something that you would appreciate or that you liked, and you're solving that for you, and you're like, you know what, this is going to help others along the way. I think that's something that's pretty powerful. And something that I can relate to is, so I have a bachelor's of science in computer science.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, not a scientist in that sense, but
you're a computer scientist. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, when I was a kid, my parents were missionaries to Africa.
Oh, wow.
So I'm kind of an immigrant in a different kind of sense, too. I moved back from Africa when I was 16 to U.S. So it's like I'm an American immigrant, and it's, you know, a different kind of way. Just like I just really didn't understand America and how it worked. But I was always tinkering, right? Like I was hacking our internet satellite in Congo and to get faster speeds,
oh, wow.
and like, you know, hacking yeah. software to get access to it, to fix things, you know,
that's not a normal story. I was hacking our internet satellite in the Congo, right? Like that is not a normal story, which just kind of shows that that really made you think different, right?
It did make me think different. Yeah. It did make me think different. And I was doing that not because I thought of how big it was or what it was. It was, I wanted faster internet speeds to do this other thing that I was trying to do, right? And I was trying to get American culture to my computer at the time. I was trying to play video games, and I just like was doing things like that. Well, that scientist part of me, well, then I came back to the real world and needed to make money and needed to survive, needed to go to school and come from a poor family. And, you know, so then I started bartending. I started selling, you know, mm-hmm. I started selling. I became a musician, went on tour, sold our music, sold our merch, sold our tour to venues, sold all kinds of things. And you learn to sell yourself like along that way too, right? So it was interesting. And I think it's, since I dug into your story, we're getting a little bit more, because it becomes, how do you become like, you know, branding, marketing, and selling a product when you're a data person or a scientist person?
Yeah.
And I think it comes like, you're like, well, I meet all of these makers all the time that are amazing. They're creative. They know how to make something. They're like, they're bringing it out of nothing. Like that's just absolute genius to me. Someone that can bring an idea that doesn't exist out of nothing. But also when I was playing music, I lived at home. I couldn't rent a studio. And I was like, you know, how amazing would it be to have this place where you just have all these instruments, like these different rooms that people can come in and rent them out and have band practice and, you know, everything set up, because it's not easy to just have all that gear and all of that equipment somewhere and really practice if you're trying to make it. So it sounds very familiar, right? I wouldn't say that I had a lot of friends around me that were entrepreneurs or doing the thing or like kind of showing the roadmap. That was kind of more delay in my life, because I just had people that were going after like, I want to do good work and value. And it wasn't like tied to money, which was a hindrance, because I could have moved faster if I saw it as a business, you know. But it was providing value, trying to solve these problems, trying to do these things. Okay, now I'm selling to survive. Oh, wow. I can, all these different skills I have now when I've actually found something, which was like e-commerce and digital marketing and that kind of discovery and trailblazing, was like, oh, I have all these skills I can pull from all these other things before. And I just wanted to like give a couple notes on just like, you know, the knowledge you just dropped there around, well, I wasn't even really thinking of it as a real business. I was doing it for myself, you know, and then I had some backing, and then, you know, and then I was like, okay, I was getting to the core of things, like, and maybe that was motivated by, well, you know, why did dad leave, or why did this not work, or why did mom's business fail, or why did, you know, what's the next thing next to solar? Whoever knows what that motivation is, it's cool to pull it all the way back around.
You hit a really important point, which was like this kind of falling into selling, right? Selling is like a trial by fire, right? At first, it's like really hard, and it's very uncomfortable. And it never fully goes, like, selling is never like this totally comfortable thing that you're just like, oh, I love selling all day long. But eventually you learn to love to sell, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, it's this one skill, like, and I would say, you know, between your, you know, with your story and mine, we both had to learn how to sell, right? And like, when you learn how to sell, you don't realize it at the time, but you're actually learning a skill that is absolutely crucial for an entrepreneur.
Yes. Right?
This ability to sell, like, I wish I could go back in time and tell myself, like, when I was so stressed out about targets that I had and like early morning meetings and like walking cold calling, and I would get butterflies in my stomach. like literally walking into a doctor's office and like trying to sell, you know, I'd never met them. They didn't want to speak to me. They just viewed me as an annoying salesman. Like, if I had gone back in time and said, hey, all these skills, all of these experiences, and like honestly pretty scary experiences sometimes that you've had will be valuable in the future, right? For you as an entrepreneur, for you as a builder, for you as a salesperson, for you to train other people, right? But you know, you like rarely does anyone ever tell you that, right? Like,
yeah, no.
Right?
No one's like, look, I know you, this is like your vision for where you see yourself. And like this year, this 2 years right now are like going to be crucial for whenever you launch that business to be able to handle rejection, to be able to like, you know, if like one thing I realized was I actually love to sell. I hated selling religion as a kid. That's what I didn't love.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like what was pushed down my throat was just like, you know, door to door or Sunday school or, you know, and I have faith like to an extent. Yeah. Right. But it was not like selling religion. Yeah. But if I'm selling something that I actually believe helps people. Right. And I do know that religion helps some people. Okay. For everyone listening. But like for me, if I believe that something helps someone, like let's say it's hiring Marknology to help someone on Amazon, the right brand, or it's, you know, working with products that are good. Once we are selling them, I'm like, I can sell the crap out of them because, you know, I really do believe that you working with us will give you the best chance at success. And I believe that it becomes super easy. And I think for most people, at least me, I was like bullied. I was a redhead that's like African on the inside. I was like, it was not an easy like assimilation for me into American culture. And for me, like, I didn't see a lot of value in myself, like, you know, for my young 20s, probably, yeah, and things like that, you know, self-confidence and esteem and stuff like that. But it was like, but this thing that I do, or this thing that I'm selling, like, does have value. So it was like, if I was selling myself as a service, like, you know, hire me to do this, or choose me to work here, or like, I was pretty like timid, you know, or shy. But if I was selling something like, you know, a product or a service or my team or a company, I found that I was like pretty bold and outgoing and like confident. And so that was one thing that I just tried to do to kind of hack my confidence early on when it came to like rejection and like getting in there, and then tying that to my scientist self of saying, I know that if I talk to 100 people, I'm going to close 5. It's the data. The data says like I talk to 100, it's the numbers, you know, I'll get 5 of them to say yes. Or,
and by the way, Matt, that applies to everything, right? It applies literally to everything from getting customers to getting partners, hiring, raising money, right? Like raising money is a numbers game. Like it literally is a numbers game. And it's like, what's interesting to me is how few people, you know, talk about how even raising money is a numbers game. Like you literally put together a targeting list and you go down the targeting list. And by the way, most of the investors you talk to are going to tell you, no, you're an idiot. No one wants this. No one will ever buy this. And you just keep going. Right. And you feel terrible. Like you, and then you just reset and then keep going. And then actually some of the most successful entrepreneurs who've raised incredible amounts of money get rejected the most. Right. Yeah. Like, you know, but they just keep going.
That's why I'm here. And I'm like, I have a lot to prove still, you know, I feel like, you know, just getting started. But for me, it was someone that early on in life just faced a lot of rejection, whether that was school or companies or people or, you know, but I feel like I really do look back at those failures. And I'm just sharing that because like, I look back at it now at 35, I'm like, for 35, I've lived a ton of life. And I've like learned a lot of lessons that a lot of people don't even learn, you know, in a lifetime.
Yeah.
And those have really set me up to be like, to be the most refined. You know, if I can sell to, my dad was a genius that like an IQ genius that would always see the opposite side of something or like always see flip side. As a kid, it was the most frustrating thing in the world to be wrong, even if you're right, because that person can argue better or like, you know, give you a perspective that's different. But if you're like, if you can essentially as a scientist, like give the whys to something that you're selling to the objections. Mm-hmm. Right? So for every objection that's out there, you have like a why or you have a solution to it. So you're selling essentially to an intellectual customer.
Yeah.
Right. And then like you can sell to anything below that. Mm-hmm. I do believe that. So it's like, you know, I spend a lot of time learning the other side of something so that whenever I got to those no's, I would have a reason, you know, or something to sell to them that I thought, you know, they might bite onto. And I know we're not here to talk about selling.
No, it's just like it's critically important. Like it's literally for, I'm sure for everyone that's kind of listening or watching the podcast, like selling is what actually can make entrepreneurs and companies just incredible, the ability to sell. And it's something that, you know, the founder, the CEO, like the leader of the company has to be able to lead by selling. You can't hang back and like expect, oh, let me hire a great salesperson and let them sell it. It's like you just have to get good at it. Even if you're not good at it, you have to get good at it.
Because that salesperson, they're salespeople. They don't really have roots. And there's going to be a matter of time until they've proven their worth there and they're going to go get more. They're going to go get paid somewhere else more, you know, and I've seen that over and over and over again. So like if the founder's not the one selling it, and as far as the story goes and the brand goes and all of that, it's like if the owner doesn't believe in it, what are we talking about? Right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I mean, it sounds like you have to say, I can't sell anything I don't believe in. Right. Like I literally, you know, I've had people like approach me with all sorts of like incredible opportunities. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't care. Right. Like, you know, I could have started a fintech company, but I don't care about fintech. Like I literally couldn't care less. It doesn't drive me. So I would be terrible at it.
You're like, I'm going to wake up every day and I'm going to have to like force myself to work, force myself to care about this thing because it's not natural. It's not authentic. And like my motivation, inspiration is like next level. Like I'm just a very motivated person and I've worked hard my whole life. But whenever I lose that because I stop caring about whatever I'm going after, like let's say it's a goal achieved or let's say it's like I shouldn't have done that anyway or I lose respect for the thing I'm working on or I lose interest, it is just so difficult. It's like uphill for me, you know? And so once you realize that you kind of have that magic power or you have like this unlimited amount of like motivation, if you're like aligned right, you're like, I'm never doing anything that I'm not aligned with because it's so hard.
Matt, you become unstoppable, right? Like you're an unstoppable entrepreneur, right? In many ways because of that. I mean, and one thing that I thought might be interesting is the interlinking, like, you know, in terms of on the future food side, you know, that I thought might be interesting for us to talk about. So I'm, you know, I love
bring it.
I think it's super interesting. IndieBio, which I mentioned, I started and I co-founded and we built for about 4 years. That for me was an education in helping a lot of entrepreneurs build a lot of really interesting companies. About a third of those companies were really future food companies. Some of them were like gene therapy companies and cancer therapeutic companies, but some of them were like the first cell-based meat company, right? Like this mind-blowing thing, which seems like science fiction, but you could actually make reality, right? And honestly, it sounds like you might read some science fiction or enjoy some science fiction, right? I love science fiction. Absolutely. I devour any good sci-fi. And by the way, always looking for good recommendations for good sci-fi. Okay. But like that for me, the idea that we could actually help make that a reality, and we did, right? The company's called Upside Foods. We're the first investor in Upside Foods, and I worked with Uma, the founder and CEO, to build and scale this company. Really unlocked this idea in my head. It was like, oh wow, like there's a whole range of new companies, and so we've seen that with like Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat, of all these kind of future food companies. But there's so much more. If food is technology, right? Which it has been, you know, 10,000 years ago, our ancestors said, hey, you know what's cool? Instead of like hunting and foraging, let's create this new technology. It's called farms, right?
And I don't want to leave. This waterfall is perfect. And like this valley is perfect. And I don't want to leave. And I don't want to chase the food. So let's figure out how to stay here.
Exactly. And then, you know, I know you're in Kansas. Like Kansas has lots of these, you know, relatively new technologies called farms, right? Like these technologies, right? A farm 10,000 years ago, the idea of taking similar, like monocropping, right? Similar plants, planting them, artificially irrigating the fields with water, keeping all the pests out and all the animals that would eat it, like eat that food, and then eventually creating enough food so that we were not attached to the land, right? That we could attach to the land, meaning the like humanity's creative energies could go outside of just surviving and getting enough to eat. Right? Like all of these things are like mind-blowing things, right? And this is kind of, I guess, our segue into entrepreneurship, but also like really the future of food. Our ancestors 10,000 years ago started this journey, domesticating plants and animals. Like corn originally started as teosinte. Have you seen the what Tio Sente, it's like almost inedible. And now everyone enjoys corn, right? Like it's kind of a cool thing, but it is a plant that would not necessarily exist in nature the way that it does in our farms. We have evolved it. We have selected for it so that it optimizes for the production of food. And so that was really an inspiration around the future of food and what started my journey with food. Cause I just find it so hard to believe that there are still today, I think it's like a billion people on this planet that go hungry, right? Like crazy. We have the ability to grow food for them. Like, why is that? You were in Africa, right? Like you saw this firsthand, like hunger is still a very big problem in Africa. It's a problem in the US too, by the way, right? Like it's a problem in the US too. Not as much of a problem as it is in developing countries, but still a problem. Why can't we feed everyone, right? Like enough so that they're like, they're good, right?
And it's because the world was ran by people that think of us as products,
mm-hmm.
you know? So,
but how do we unleash like the creative energies of, you know, cause there are people that grow food. There are people, there are entrepreneurs out there that could serve the local needs of everyone, right? Like they're like, this is where this future food and entrepreneurship combine together. You know, I know we both work in the pet category, but like, you know, feeding all of us, right? And I include our pets in that as well. Like that is doable. We just need to unlock the entrepreneurial energies of people. Even, you know, one of the most interesting things to me is like the bottom billion. Like, how do we feed the bottom billion people? Like people who survive on a dollar a day. How do we feed them? Right? How do we? And I think we can do it economically. And so that
I think some of it is releasing people like myself and you that, you know, come from humble beginnings where we had to, at least me, like I'm still in that path of like providing for my family, my mom and my dad and my sisters. And mm-hmm. you know, we're taking care of people like in the hierarchy of needs. Right. Mm-hmm. We're taking care of some of those baseline needs of security and safety and, you know, just. Some of the minds of the world that can solve these problems are tied up doing things they shouldn't be doing. Right. And so, you know, I feel no guilt whenever I'm taking brands digital and, you know, getting rid of some jobs, or creating other jobs, right. Yeah. Or like, what else are you going to do with your brain space? I don't know. Figure it out. Solve hunger. Like, you know, there's like so many other things we can be doing outside of like, you know, bagging groceries or, you know, driving a truck or like some of these things that are getting automated. Mm-hmm. You know, because everyone has this potential. I'm nobody. I'm just someone that's passionate about whatever I'm doing.
We're all in the end, in the grand scheme, we're all nobody but somebody, right? Like we're all important because we're people, right? But we are like, there's, you know, there's everyone has to put their pants on in the morning, right? Like we're all really the same.
Like I'm different in that I grew up in a war-torn Congo saw crazy things. It's honestly like a sci-fi movie, Ryan. Like honestly, like it's I didn't even explain it to people until my 30s because I just didn't know where to start, you know. And so you know what I bring to the table is literally perspective. Like I can see stuff from a different perspective and a different angle, and maybe be outside the box coming to the table. If I was sitting in a room with a bunch of scientists. That might be my one contribution is I just see the problem from a different angle than the other minds, you know? And I'm like, that's something that all of us can do. It's free.
Yeah. And by the way, I understand where you're coming from because it's like, you know, when you've experienced some level of like, you know, challenges, right? In one way or another, sometimes for people who haven't experienced similar challenges, it can be shocking for them, right? Like, so you don't talk about it, right? You're like, hey, you know, I lived in this really rough neighborhood in Miami, like the Miami Vice days. I grew up in the time when there were like, you know, dead bodies floating up because of the, you know, the drug wars that were happening in Miami. And it's like, you know, people just can't comprehend, you know, they view it as entertainment, like something you'd watch on TV. Right. And you see, you know,
their life hasn't been threatened like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And there are people and we're relatively speaking in great shape. Like there are people who, you know, like you were saying, people in the Congo, like people who were part of these civil wars, right? Like who were like, I mean, really had it really, really hard. And what I find really interesting is sometimes, unfortunately, you know, these really traumatic things break people, right? But sometimes it makes people really, really strong.
Yeah.
Right. And
makes
so
makes or breaks here, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the sad part is, like, I'm sure you and I both have people in our lives that have been broken by traumatic experiences. It's one of the hardest things when you have people in your life that have been broken by traumatic experiences. But, you know, the flip side is those of us that maybe have been broken but are able to continue moving forward or rebuild ourselves or however we want to phrase it, it's what we can add and how we can help others, right? And that's
right.
It's like how
beauty.
We serve, right? Others.
Yeah, I love it. I'm gonna stop you because I want to give a shout out to our sponsor and I want to ask a few more questions about this. I'm gonna get a little bit more direct with my questions because I think we're jamming and we've just had some fun, and I think this stuff is amazing. Like, honestly, to our listeners, if you're trying to be an entrepreneur, a founder, a business leader, any of this, it's all about your mindset and it's all about your intentionality and, you know, finding what you do best and just leaning into that. So it sounds like simple things, but it's really not, you know, but when you're able to act on those things and be able to pull from your past failures, or whether it's just in business or childhood or marriage or whatever the case, you pull from those to be your strength moving forward to help others. It's like you can do some, you know, amazing things. So shout out again to our sponsor. It's made this episode and this podcast possible. Finding expert software developers doesn't have to be difficult, especially when you visit fullscale.io. We can build a software team quickly and affordably. Use the Fullscale platform to define your technical needs and then see what available developers, testers, and leaders are ready to join your team. Visit fullscale.io to learn more. So Ryan,
yeah,
we've talked about things you've done in the past. We've talked about things that have gotten you here.
Yeah.
We've talked about, like, you know, passion and interests, and covered some of the background. And I think I don't have nearly as much as I want, but for the sake of the podcast and the listeners here, we're talking about Wild Earth and we're talking about the future of food.
Yeah.
What are you doing now with Wild Earth? And, you know, what are you guys doing that's special in regards to innovating food for animals, as someone that has a Doberman downstairs?
We'll send you some Wild Earth. We'll definitely lots of goodies, little goodie bag.
Okay, I'm a huge dog person. I'm, like, honestly, like a little bit of a Tarzan that's living in real life society here. But, you know, talk about what you guys are doing. Talk about, like, you know, what project you're on now. Like what you're working on.
Yeah. So I was really inspired by, you know, having worked in kind of the future food space for us, for humans. You know, I'm also a huge animal lover. I grew up with dogs and cats, and, you know, it sounds like you may have had experience with other animals. I also had, like, a bunch of, like, you know, birds, lizards, snakes, you name it. I just love animals. I love them in every way. I find them endlessly fascinating. But particularly I love dogs. So my dog Lady, you probably might've heard some noises. She was crying. She came in here crying. She wanted some attention. She's a 13-year-old German Shepherd. But she, you know, like I really wanted to transform food for our best friends, right? Like, that was really something that really resonated for me. I was like, you know what? If I'm going to spend another decade of my life doing something, like, you know, animals bring us such joy. For those of us that have animals, we know, like, there's just this connection and this bond that you have with your dog, or, you know, for some people, if they're cat people, with their cats. I love both, but I'm a dog guy, I have to admit. It's like, I wanted to do something for them. And I really wasn't happy with the type of food that I saw. I mean, most people know, like, the idea of eating dog food sounds absolutely disgusting. Why? Like, why does it sound disgusting? Because we know it's not good. And so, and it's like, it's like just such a known thing that people are like, oh, pet food and dog food, terrible stuff. Don't eat it. It's toxic for humans. And it's like, wait a minute. Toxic for humans. But our animals are, like, our dogs are animals. We are animals. If it's bad for us, isn't it bad for them? And so, you know, I started to read, and, you know, the scientist side of me started reading these FDA inspection reports and things like that. Like, there's euthanasia drug in dogs' food. There's melted plastics. There's all sorts of, like, horrible stuff in there. I'm like, how does this get in there? It's because their supply chain is often contaminated. So the meat itself that ends up in the supply chain, it's not good meat. We all know that. But it turns out somehow euthanasia drug gets in there. Some people think it's because there's, like, euthanized horses in their food. And it just, like, it just blew my mind. And so I was like, okay, well, this is absolutely horrible. I mean, the FDA inspection reports, I've read them. It talks about, like, roadkill being thrown in, you know, rats that have been killed in the rendering facility where they render the meat that comes in. When the rats are killed, that's meat, so they just throw them in there, right? Or like when the meat goes bad,
oh my God,
grocery store, you know, like the beef is wrapped in plastic with a little styrofoam. Where does it go when it goes bad? It goes to the rendering plants for our pets. Well, guess what they do? The FDA has found this, that sometimes they don't take the wrapping off because it's a biohazard. It's like meat that's gone off. They throw it into the renderer, which heats it up and churns it through. It melts the plastic. And so the plastic, which we know is a known carcinogen, causes cancer, ends up in the food and in the meat, like melted in there. And so I was like, this is insane that it's insane that it's legal, right? It's insane that this is, you know, this is allowed to pass as food. And so, you know, I'd kind of been going plant-based. I'd gotten on this healthy thing where I was like, okay, I'm going to try and eat healthier, more plants, all this sort of stuff. And so I was like, what if I made a plant-based dog food? It sounded like, I was like, one, can dogs eat plant-based? And the turns out they're omnivores like us, right? So they can. And then two, I was like, is it healthy for them? Like these dogs that were on plant-based diets that were living much longer than most of my other dogs had, right? I was used to having dogs like 10-ish years of age, big dogs. And I was meeting these big dogs that were like 15, 16, 17, 18 years old. I didn't even know that dogs could live that long, right? And so it made me start thinking, well, maybe there's something interesting here. And you know, at the baseline, I was like, well, at least if their food's cleaner as a starting point, without all the nasty stuff we know is already getting into dog food, maybe that's enough, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so that was kind of the journey that I began. I was like, okay, they can survive and they seem to be able to do well on a plant-based diet. So let's see, I wonder if I could start a company doing this. I wanted to feed my dog plant-based. So I was like, okay, great. I was eating mostly plant-based at the time. And, you know, I'm 100% plant-based now. And so I started Wild Earth. Like that was really my mission. I wanted to help those that gave us such joy and love, our best friends. You know, kind of fast forward to today, you know, Wild Earth is, we went from an idea to, we are now the leading plant-based dog food company in the US. We're actually working on some lab grown meat. So some cell-based meat, we're making, cell-based chicken too. So we've got plant-based, which is our product that's out. We have 8 products in the market. We have dog food, we have treats, we have supplements. The most fun part on this journey is I was able to go into Shark Tank. You know, I closed Mark Cuban. At the time, all the other sharks thought it was absolutely crazy. We didn't have a product. We were still in the R&D stages. Mark came in. He actually cut us a large check, actually one of the largest checks on that episode. He loved the idea of cleaner, healthier proteins for our pets. And at the time, it was still kind of an idea. And the other sharks made fun of him for investing because they were like, this is crazy. You know, vegan dogs, this is nuts. And of course, you know, Mark, I don't know if you have a favorite on the tank. I don't know if you watch Shark Tank at all.
Well, I have. I have worked with the Mark Cuban brand twice before.
Oh, I didn't know that. Amazing. Okay, great.
On Amazon. So like they found, you know, they came to me and they were like a Mark Cuban brand and then, you know, like helping them on Amazon. So yeah, that's the kind of my connection. So yeah, I'm a Mark Cuban fan if I have to pick one.
Yeah, Mark is like, I was, before going on the show, I was a Mark Cuban fan. I love the other sharks too. And I honestly find Mr. Wonderful hilarious, right? Like he always trying to get these like, you know, these royalty deals and whatever else. I find him hilarious. But like, you know, really like sharks I'd like to work with, always Mark, you know, I always found whatever he had to say absolutely fascinating. So going on the show, that was my hope that I was able to kind of close Mark. I knew he liked some of these alternative proteins and like healthier plant-based protein products. And we started working together and he really helped me, you know, get very practical about like how, you know, how do we reach consumers? How do we make a practical product? How do we launch? How do we retail? It sounds like, you know, you've worked with a lot of people may not know, but Mark Cuban has the Mark Cuban companies. Like that's his, like one of his companies. And it's a great group of people that work for Mark in Mark Cuban, in the Mark Cuban companies, company. And so they really help the entrepreneurs that they back on Amazon and a bunch of different ways, you know, retail, all this sort of stuff. And so, so, So I think one of the most interesting things, and we've been growing like really fast recently, actually, the last, I would say this year, we've been growing our revenue 10% month on month, which is a lot, is that, and actually earlier this year, two studies came out that shows that these are peer-reviewed, published studies. You can kind of Google them, that dogs on plant-based diets have lived between 1 to 2 years longer on average than dogs on conventional meat-based kibble diets. And these were two separate studies done by two veterinary professors. And so now I think people are waking up to this idea of like, oh, it's not that you want to be vegan or that you want your dogs to be vegan. It's actually, if you want your dogs to be healthier and live longer, plant-based diets are really good for them. Better than conventional meat-based kibble. And that, I think, has woken up a lot of consumers to the idea of like, oh, wow, of course I want my dog to be healthier. Of course I want my dog with me for longer. And so we've really seen the benefit of that. And I think we're going to be seeing more data around plant-based diets and how it can be healthier for dogs. And so I think, you know, this year, 2022, has really been a game changer for us, because for years we've been, you know, looking at the data we've been getting from our customers, talking to our customers, seeing the health improvements, but we haven't had like peer-reviewed data, published papers, and now we're starting to see them. We've already had two this year.
I've heard that there's definitely like a quieting of any type of companies that try to come out that are like, you know, not using that kind of speak out to like the FDA, like findings and how bad the food is. And like, you know, there's a lot of companies that the government, you know, whatever, is not really making it easy, you know, to get that information and publish it. And like, so I think that's amazing.
The vet schools, Matt, exactly what you're saying, like even the vet schools. So a lot of people are like, oh, well, what do my vets say? The vet schools, a lot of people don't realize this, but a lot of the big food companies that we all know, there's like four top food companies, Mars, Nestle, General Mills, you know, a couple of other smaller food companies. They're the leaders in making pet food, and they pay, a lot of people don't know this, they pay for the kitchens and a lot of the nutritional information that our vets get in vet school, in veterinary school. And so the vets are basically being told like all this mass market stuff with all these health issues and problems. Their education is coming from the companies that make those products.
Right. Exactly. Think about our public school system, but we won't go there.
We definitely don't need to go there, but it's like, it's one of those things where it's like there is an alternative. And so, you know, for us, now that we're starting to get this data, now we can start to really put it out there. And what we're finding is it's helping a lot of people with like, it's not necessarily that people are like, oh, I want my dog to live forever. Some people like that. You and I probably would be like, yes, I want my dog to live for very, I want my dog to be with me for literally as long as I'm alive. But also, you know, they're dogs with like skin allergies that all of a sudden they switch to a plant-based diet and suddenly, their skin allergies.
Just like humans. Like,
way better. They're feeling healthier. They're feeling better, or less itchy paws. Suddenly the itchy paws go away, or the diarrhea is gone, or like, and it's just switching their diets. Let food be thy medicine. Right. We know that. And so now we're finally starting to see that with better and healthier food. And so so that's honestly been something that I've absolutely loved. You know, and I get pictures. I'm sure you do as well with your, you know, with your company, too. I get pictures from our customers. And that's like my favorite thing. You know, these smiling dogs that are like happy, you know, either eating the food or, you know, being sneaky and going into the bag and eating the food. And so I just absolutely love it. Like every business has challenges, right? But it's something that brings me joy every day.
Well, we'll definitely have to wrap, you know, after the podcast. I feel like I just had some marketing ideas for you while you were talking.
Oh, I love that. I love marketing ideas.
I'll give you some free ideas, but, you know, just also what's been working for us, what hasn't been working for us, you know, we have just a really high customer retention rate. So, you know, it allows us to go out there and get new customers if you're keeping, you know, close to one out of two customers that find us. You know, and the user generated content is just like, you know, it's amazing. They're trying to get in the box, it's coming in the mail, you know, and they're trying to like, they know what's in there, you know, and they're excited about it. And these are like supplements. So they're thinking of them like treats, you know. I know that they're packed full of vitamins and stuff. So, you know, it's good for them. And
It's good, Matt. They know it's good stuff, right? They've had it. They smell it. You know, they can smell so much better than us. So the package is closed, but they can still smell the product, right? So
yeah, and we know what's good for us. You know, like even humans, like, you know, we're eating McDonald's or Taco Bell, and we know it's not good for us. And, you know, but once you, maybe you get to this elevated state where you've got a little bit more money than a Taco Bell budget, and it's like you got to change habits and just like adjust and get healthier and be able to afford, you know, for us, like I think one thing that's hard is it's like it's difficult and it costs more to be healthy.
It does.
Like in
it
this
does.
In this country, right? You have like to go to separate stores. You have to think more critically. You have to like order your items separately. There's nothing that comes that way, especially if you're not in these like bigger, more advanced cities like LA and New York that have these types of restaurants specifically to that, right? In Congo, there wasn't dog food. So we legitimately made chicken and rice and things like that for our dog every single day.
The dogs were eating the same thing you were eating, right? Like that's, I mean,
they really were.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We were eating the same thing, and like that's how I grew up. You know, it wasn't just leftovers from us. It was like we made a separate meal for them, and I had a Belgian Shepherd, super intelligent dog that you're just like, he needs to be fed that anyway. You know, it felt like a human that with their intelligence level. But you know, this is common sense stuff, and it's just like, you know, I think it's awesome that companies are, you know, built around just doing better for others, even if that means like man's best friend, you know, and incredible work. And so I definitely want to talk about what you guys are doing. Maybe do an awesome collab.
For sure.
The owner, my co-founder, is an amazing guy. He was at Disney and ESPN and some, you know, some very high level exec stuff. And he had a sickness. Doctor said he couldn't do that job anymore. He needs to take it easy.
Oh,
and,
wow.
You know, he had some animals that helped him through that. You know, through that. And we wanted to give back to them, you know, and so that's the company that is Waggity and what we're doing. And
by the way, that's an amazing story, Matt, because I think that's like when you really connect, like, you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, your dog can't talk to you. It's like, yes, they can. They talk to you through how they move, through their eyes. Like for those of us that have dogs that love them, they love us back. And you have it's a special connection you have with them, especially through the hard times, right? So it sounds like your co-founder experienced that, right? Like the connection that really took him through the illness. And he was, you know, his best friend was there for him, or his best friend.
Yes, I mean, it's authentic, it's true. And like the products that were not made, sure, as a business, but it was also made like, you know, with them in mind. And so, mm-hmm. you know, quality ingredients and quality stuff like that, I love it. We're coming up on time and I like, you know, I just feel like some of these conversations just go, in the left field when you're really just jamming and you're aligned, and, I could bring up sci-fi, but I won't because I know we'd be here forever.
We'll be here for hours talking about sci-fi, right? So
no, but this has been absolutely amazing. And, it's super cool to see innovation in food, and I know the uphill battle that you have. So that's where I'm leaning my resources. If there's anything I can do, anyone listening, want to support a good cause. I know we got a lot of animal lovers on the show. So, you know, Wild Earth, I'm looking forward to getting my treats or a bag of food.
We'll get you all of it, Matt. So wildearth.com for anyone that's interested. We're also on Chewy, Amazon, Walmart, wherever you shop, we're online, and we'll be coming out in retail soon. But right now we're still primarily online. But we are one of the fastest growing dog food brands in the US. And our focus is really on making healthier, better plant-based products for our best friends.
No, I absolutely love it. And we'll have to do it. We'll have to get you back on the show and see where things are, you know, a few months down the road, and then circle back up as you're, I know you're developing new product around chicken. I'm not going to try to speak to that in scientific terms, but you know, we'll love to know how that's going as you release a new line, and see where you guys are. One more time, shout out to our sponsor, FullScale.io. Do you need to hire software engineers, testers, or leaders? Let FullScale help. They have the people and the platform to help you build and manage a team of experts. When you visit FullScale.io, all you need to do is answer a few questions and let the platform match you up with fully vetted, highly experienced team of software engineers, testers, and leaders. At FullScale, they specialize in building long-term teams that work only for you. Learn more when you visit FullScale.io. Ryan, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show and getting to jam with you about your passions and Wild Earth and everything that you've been up to. Thanks again for your time, and thank you, Hustlers, for your attention. We'll see you next time.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.